Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 144 in the series entitled The Cosmic Brain Part 2, on the function and essence of Torah. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York during the winter of 57-62.
I found this week a letter that the Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote to somebody in the month of Nissan Tavshin Chav Dalet, 1964. And in that letter, he defines to him in very clear and brief terms the message that the Alter Rebbe is conveying to us here in chapters 51 and 52 of Tanya. The letter was written to a Jew in Tel Aviv whose name is Reb Naftali Yosefson, and I have here an English translation, so I just want to read for you a few paragraphs from it, because it encapsulates very clearly what the Alter Rebbe is saying here. He writes like this: in answer to your query, in which you ask to explain what is the concept of Shekhinah, the divine immanence or divine indwelling, which is mentioned many times in the teachings of our sages. So the concept is extensively expounded upon, particularly in the books and discourses of Hasidic teachings. You can look it up in the indexes published in the back of Tanya, Torah Er, Likut Torah. Here I will offer a brief explanation, obviously not a comprehensive one, as space does not allow. Since God is the ultimate perfection and is free of all limitations and definitions, it is self-evident that, in the words of the Alter Rebbe, the fact that he creates universes does not express what God is. At the same time, he is, as Maimonides writes in the Laws of the Fundamentals of Torah, the one who brings every existence into being. All existences exist only as derivatives of his ultimate existence, and he is the one upon whom all existence are utterly dependent upon. It is also obvious that just as no creature can comprehend the nature of God's creation of reality, ex nihilo, so too no creature can comprehend the nature of God, even the nature of God as the creator of the world and the source of every existence. In the words of the great Jewish philosophers, if I knew him, I would be him. So though a person realizes and understands that no thing can create itself, and that one must therefore conclude that the created reality has a source that generates its existence, this is only proof of the existence of the Creator, not an understanding of what he is, even as Creator. Nevertheless, God desired that the divine influences upon creation and the divine immanence in the world should also should also include elements that the human mind can comprehend. In the words of the sweet singer of Israel, "When I see your heavens, the work of your fingers, I come to appreciate you." Indeed, this includes an instruction to man regarding the service of his Creator. Lift your eyes upward and see who created these. This aspect of the divine reality, that which pervades our world to the extent that it can be discovered by God's creatures, is what is meant by the term Shekhinah, meaning that which dwells within and encloses itself. It is important to emphasize that one cannot categorize the divine reality into various aspects or areas, God forbid. Saying one part is Shekhinah and one part transcends Shekhinah, it is only that from the perspective of the contemplating creature, there are things that he can comprehend and things that he cannot comprehend. So he calls this part Shekhinah and this part not Shekhinah. In truth, however, there are no categories in the plural, but a singular, utterly abstract reality. Consider the soul of man. Obviously, it's not divisible into 248, 365, or 613 components. Nevertheless, the observing eye differentiates between the vitality of the foot and the vitality of the brain. Though both are of a single essence, the soul that vitalizes the body. How much more so, it is so regarding the divine reality. So when we say that the Shekhinah is present in the Holy Temple, it's not to say that only that aspect of the divine that is called Shekhinah is there, but to stress that there the divine reality is present in such a way that it dwells within and clothes itself to the extent that it is observable with our physical eye. In the fact that the space of the Ark did not take up space, the 10 miracles that regularly occurred in the Holy Temple, and so on. That's more or less a translation of what the Rebbe writes in the letter to this man of 1964. So now back to our discussion here. The Alter Rebbe was saying in the beginning of Perek Nun Beis, of the 52nd chapter, that we find various names that were given by our sages. For example, in the Zohar you have Alma Dizgalia, the revealed reality, or Matronissa, the queen, or Imatata, the nether mother, Eim HaBonim, the mother of children, Knesset Yisrael, the ingathering of the souls, or in Talmudic terminology, the name Shekhinah. The name Shekhinah, so the Alter Rebbe says, all of these names basically express the reality of how Hashem defined and articulates His reality as a creator, as the soul of the universe, as the source and vitality of all the worlds. As the Rebbe writes in the letter, does this constitute the Ein Sof? Are we going to define Hashem? What is Hashem? The soul of the universe? No. The definition of Hashem, the definition of the Ein Sof, is not that it is the lifeline, the inner electricity, the inner soul of the cosmos. When you say, when we call Hashem der Bashefer, as many Jews call Him, the Creator, or Ribbono Shel Olam, the Master of the Universe, these are all tremendous things. You and I can't create a world, but the Alter Rebbe says it doesn't express Him. It doesn't express Him in the slightest. Shekhinah, however, Shekhinah is how Hashem defines Himself and articulates Himself as a soul of the universe. That definition of Hashem, that articulation of Hashem as the soul of the universe, that is what we mean when we call Shekhinah. Now the Ein Sof, Hashem as the Ein Sof, totally transcends our vocabulary, our experience. We can't experience it in any way. However, Hashem allows Himself to be experienced as Shekhinah, as the spiritual electricity of the universe, so that we should be able to perceive and to relate to something of His reality. And in order to give rise to reality as we know it, if Hashem would not allow a perception of Himself as Shekhinah, only he would only allow the Ein Sof in its purity to be perceived. That means if we were allowed to perceive Him for what He really is, there would be no we anymore. That would be the end of we. Since Hashem desired that there be a we, He allows Himself to be perceived and experienced as the soul of the universe. This God we can deal with. This type of divinity we can tolerate, we could contain. Hashem as a Shekhinah justifies our identity, justifies our reality. It embraces our sense of self rather than nullifies our sense of self. So what is Shekhinah? As he says in the letter, it's not that a part of Hashem ought to be labeled as Shekhinah. Rather, it's our label of Him. Our label of Hashem is the Shekhinah. Or rather, it is the label He allows us to give to Him. There is a dimension in which He allows only, in which He allows Himself to be perceived as Shekhinah, as the soul of the universe. What about the Ein Sof? The Alter Rebbe says the Ein Sof, from his perspective, is everywhere. From our perspective, it's nowhere. And this is again similar to a soul. The true soul we remain indifferent to. What we experience in our body is the soul as Shekhinah, the soul as the engine, as the inner engine of the body. However, the Alter Rebbe said, even the Shekhinah itself, if it were to be manifest in our world, we would lose our independent identity. It would be like searching for the rays of the sun within the sun itself. You're not going to find the rays of the sun if you look for them in the sun. So if the Shekhinah, which is our source, which is the electricity, the divine electricity that animates us, would be manifestly present in the world, you would not recognize the rays of the sun in the sun. We would lose our independent identity. One second, we'll soon see. That's the next chapter. And therefore, the Shekhinah needs a cloak. It needs a transmitter. That which will receive it, internalize it, conceal it, eclipse it, and then translate or transfer its energy in a fashion that's appropriate to all of the worlds, each world according to its own capacity. And again, this is similar to the soul. The soul, even the soul as the spiritual electricity of the body, if the soul's energy entirely would dwell in the hand or the foot, they would be overwhelmed. For example, a body needs oxygen. A brain needs oxygen every moment. But if the brain would receive too much oxygen at any moment, it would be overwhelmed. It would destroy the brain. And the same is true about any other part of the body. So if the Shekhinah of the soul would dwell in any part of the body in its full intensity, it would destroy that part of the body. The brain, however, is that part of us that is conducive to serve as the home, as the abode for the soul. And then the brain internalizes it and then transmits it to every other part of the body. What is the brain in the spiritual patterns of the cosmos? The brain, he said, that is the Torah. The divine presence, the divine electricity, that is the source of all of the vitality of all of the worlds, and it encloses itself in all of the worlds in a way that is perceived by the worlds. It first manifests itself in the cosmic brain, which is the Torah, because in the Torah there are two paradoxical components. On one hand, it is higher than Shekhinah. Torah comes from Chachma, and therefore it does not get nullified in the presence of the Shekhinah, like the rays of the sun in the presence of the sun, because the rays of the sun come from the sun. Unlike the Torah, which doesn't come from the Shekhinah, it's beyond the Shekhinah. On the other hand, the Torah descended and evolved level after level to the extent that it assumes physical properties, it discusses physical world and physical phenomena, and this descent of Torah allows us to appreciate Torah without appreciating its intensity. So Torah serves as the cloak that takes in the Shekhinah and then transmits its energy to all of the worlds. And in the presence of Torah, we do not get nullified, just like in the presence of the Ein Sof, we do not get nullified. In the presence of the Shekhinah, we would get nullified in the revealed presence of the Shekhinah. In the revealed presence of Torah, we do not get nullified because Torah descended from one level to another level. And with each descent, its inner identity is concealed and it's not manifest within our own perception. Therefore, the Alter Rebbe concluded, the place where the Shekhinah dwells is in Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. What is in the Holy of Holies, just as in this world? What lay in the Holy of Holies? The Luchas, the Torah. That's the place of the Torah. The chamber of Torah, that is the cosmic brain. That is the divine mind. And that is the location where the Shekhinah dwells. And in each world, there is a Heichal Kodesh Kadashim. In each world, there is a Holy of Holies where the Shekhinah that is relevant to that world manifests itself. Because it's only the chamber of the Holy of Holies that is the vessel, that is the garment where the Shekhinah can reveal itself. And through the Holy of Holies, the Torah of that world is then transmitted to all the creatures and all of the existences of that particular world. The Kodesh HaKadoshim would include the skull and the brain. What's in the skull? Oh, you mean because the Torah was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Oh, yes. Yeah. You mean the Torah was inside, like the brain? Okay, yeah, that's good. And now we will continue inside. We are in the middle of 52. Up to Dafayin Gimel Amid Aleph, which is page 145. Close to the bottom of the page, 7 lines from the bottom. Is it clear? Clear? Which is expressed in Torah and Mitzvahs. Because Torah and Mitzvahs are an embodiment of Hashem's wisdom and Hashem's will. Yeah. And now the Alter Rebbe gets down to specifics. And he goes through all of the worlds. It's not an easy piece, but let's try to work it out, work it through together. Okay, Shakos of Bezoya Veitz Chaim. As it has been stated in the Zoya and in Eitz Chaim. Zoyar, it's in Parshas Shlach. And in Eitz Chaim, it's in a shar called Shar Kisei HaKavod. Throughout the entire portal, this is the 46th chapter of the Eitz Chaim, the 46th portal of the Eitz Chaim, Shar Kisei HaKavod. Shar Shechinah Shehi Malchus Da'atzilus, that the Shechinah, which is Malchus of Atzilus, it is the attribute of kingship of the world of Atzilus, the world of emanation. Let's skip the brackets for a moment. He, she, the Shechina, Malchus Atzilus, mislabeshes. Clothes itself, it manifests itself, beheichel kotshe kadoshim debriya, in the chamber of the Holy of Holies of the world of Briya, she chabad, she chachma bin adaz debriya. Namely, the faculties of Chachma Bina Das of the world of Briya, which is its Heichel Kodshei Kodashim, its Holy of Holies. So the Shekhinah manifests itself first in Chachma Bina Das of Briya. That's what it says in the Eitz Chaim and in the Zohar. But in the Eitz Chaim, it doesn't say that that's Shekhinah. In the Eitz Chaim, it just says that Malchus, the Atzilus, the Malchus of the world of Atzilus, which is the lowest divine emanation of the world of Atzilus, is present in the highest emanation, the highest faculties of Briya Chabad. The Alter Rebbe earlier in the chapter was talking about Shechina, Matrunisa, Almedizgalia, Imatata, Imabonim, Knesset Yisrael. So that's what the Alter Rebbe has to explain. Shashchina Shei Malchus Datzilus. The Shechina, which is Malchus Datzilus, because in Eitz Chaim you won't find the word Shechina, you'll only find Malchus Datzilus. So the Alter Rebbe says Shechina and Malchus Datzilus are synonymous. Shechina is what we mean when we say Malchus Datzilus. Why? This is what he has to explain in the brackets in order to justify him bringing this as a source for this chapter in Tanya. So the Alter Rebbe explains. Shehi, because what is Malchus Datzilus? Malchus Datzilus, he pchines, gilui oirein seiv baruchu v'chayis shemeir loilamus. She constitutes the revelation, the manifestation of the light of the Ein Sof, blessed be He, and its vitality, which illuminates the worlds, V'lachein, therefore, he nikras, Malchus of Atzilus, is also called in Kabbalah, Dvar Hashem, the word of Hashem, v'ruach piv, and the breath of his mouth, kivayachal, so to speak. Al derech mashal, because to give an example of a human being, kemoish ba'adam, just like by a human being. Hadibur megala machshavtoi hastum v'nelamal hashaimim. His speech reveals, exposes to the hearer, to the listener, the speaker's concealed and hidden thoughts. Therefore, malchus, which constitutes, which represents the revelation, the illumination of the divine light and energy to the world, is called throughout Kabbalah Dvar Hashem, the speech of Hashem, unlike thought which is concealed. Speech reveals one's hidden thoughts and inner feelings. And therefore, everything that was said earlier about Shekhinah is also true about Malchus Datzilus. Shekhinah is synonymous with Malchus Datzilus. In the world, why won't why?
No, it's saying in Atzilus. This is the first.
1 second. Let me try to clarify. What is Dr. Rebbe saying here? One of the most frequently used terms in Kabbalah and Chassidus is Malchus, and it's always translated as kingship or leadership or sovereignty or royalty. Malchus is kingship, sovereignty. What does it mean when we talk about Malchus, Hashem's quality of Malchus? It's very obvious here that what Alter Rebbe is saying is that with Malchus, a whole new reality emerges, an entirely new reality emerges. We always talk about 10 spheres, 10 divine qualities, 10 lights that Hashem identified, so to speak, within Himself, that serve as the building blocks of all of the universes. Chachma bina das, chesed gvura tiferes, netzach chod yisoid malchus. One possible English translation is conception, comprehension, application, attraction, rejection, compassion, victory, submission, and bonding, and finally malchus, royalty, or sovereignty, or kingship. Yet Malchus is unique. It's unique and it's different than all of the other 9 before. I mean, each one is unique, but Malchus is absolutely unique and distinct, peculiar and different. Because this is what Alter Rebbe is saying, and he brings it out in other discourses clear. Malchus is the only quality that a person cannot find within himself or herself. Its power, its experience necessitates another person, another human being. What is Malchus? Malchus is leadership. Malchus is sovereignty. Malchus basically denotes your impact on another human being. And for that, you need another human being.
One second.
All of the other qualities, all of the other attributes, let's say chesed, which is attraction, which can be defined that one of its elements is obviously love. In order to implement love, I need another human being. But the experience of love is an internal experience. It's an experience within me. It's my experience. I am in love. I love. In fact, to feel love, you don't need to have another human being. Your love, the fact that there's no other human being, can actually evoke the love. Avraham Avinu sits and he's aggravated by the fact that there are no guests because his heart is burning with a passion of love and he doesn't have whom to express it to. The experience of love, the intensity of love, you can look in a person and you'll find love. What is Malchus? Malchus is your impact on another human being. This you cannot find within the person. You cannot find what you cannot search in the person and find how he impacts another human being. For that, you need another human being. And that's the metaphor of dibur, the power of speech. You can't find the power of speech within the speaker. Its whole power is its impact on another person. So you need another person. I mean, to give a more practical example for it, Malchus and Kabbalah is associated with marriage. The only thing you can't do by yourself. You can't get married to yourself. A person could be perfect. A person could be perfect. But one thing a person can do, you can't marry himself. Why not? Why can't you marry yourself? Because the whole idea of marriage is when yourself stops. When yourself ceases to exist and you connect with somebody outside of you, that's the whole point. That's its challenge and that's its beauty. Look within a person and you'll find the perfection of marriage also. The whole idea of marriage is self-transcendence. Is the moment where you exit the self to bring in another human being in your life. Let's take an example of a teacher and students. The Gemara says, "Mitalmida yoyser mikulam." I've learned a lot from my teachers. I've learned even more from my colleagues, but most I've learned from my students. So I want to ask you a question: if a teacher works and works day and night for weeks and months and years, and toils and sweats and schwitzt and steigt away in learning, will he be able to reach that perfection that one receives through students? No, that's malchus. The whole greatness is because in the communication, you are forced to redefine your identity vis-a-vis the other human being because there's a person outside of you. That is what Malchus is. You can't experience Malchus within yourself. You can't find Malchus within yourself. And that's why every single quality has the Malchus element of the quality. The success of a book is when the reader finds it enjoyable. Right? That's the Malchus element. I mean, you could sit your whole life and write books. You can write 100 novels in your own bedroom and nobody relates to them, nobody appreciates them, nobody understands them. But that's not called success. Success is when somebody else internalizes it. The same is true with any product. That's why scholars or artists who don't have the Malchus element could never actualize their talents. Because for them, Malchus means that another person is impacted by you. That's what a melech is. That's what a king is. And that's what a speech is. I mean, you could sit in your own room and speak to yourself, gesundheit, but that's not the power of speech. The power of speech is its impact on another human being. So you're not going to find that within me. That comes within me through you. Right. And that's how Chassidus defines a king, a leader. A king is not missing something within himself, and that's why he becomes a king. That's called dysfunction. When you become a leader to validate your own existence, that's a psychological wound. That's not what Malchus is in Yiddishkeit. Some people need other people's attention in order to validate their own existence. Real Malchus is no. You're a complete person within yourself. You don't need to have subjects in order to validate your existence, to justify it. You're complete within yourself. But now there's a new element. Your role, your career, as connecting to other human beings, and that's also the true power of speech. That's a good question. Now let's talk about Hashem. To put it a little sharply, Hashem, we begin only in the realm of Malchus. Hashem is perfect. Really perfect. There's only one thing that Hashem lacks, so to speak, and we'll soon see that it's not called a lack. And that is, he can't get married. You can't get married to yourself. Malchus is what Hashem lacks. For there to be the quality of Malchus, for him to have an impact and connect to something outside of him, for that there has to be a world and a reality that is at least perceived by it as being outside of him. Now you might ask, why does Hashem need Malchus? That we don't know. Because it's not a flaw. When you don't have Malchus, it's not a flaw within you. But once he decided, I want Malchus, this creates the reality of a world outside of him. And that's one thing Hashem can't do. He can't be Ein Melech B'Layam. He can't be a Melech without an outside world. I can't find leadership within you. I can't find leadership within myself. I need people who will define me as a leader. It's different. What does that mean? It's a different type of kingship. You could be an impeccable person. It's gesund to hate. But if you want a relationship with somebody else, you need somebody else. That's it. Now, really, the secular world, which has abolished in many ways the biblical priority of marriage, from a logical point of view, makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. The reason why we need to get married is because that is essentially the driving engine behind the whole creation of the universe. And ultimately, it's Nesav HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why Hashem needed Malchus? We don't know why he needed Malchus. He wanted to be a melech. He wanted to get married. He wanted to have a relationship with something outside of him. But once Hashem created Malchus, that became the pervasive rosebud, if you wish, or one of the most defining factors that characterizes us, and that is that we're incomplete without another human being. Now, this is one of the very profound ideas of the Alter Rebbe. And this is what he's conveying here in short terms. And this is the only thing Hashem couldn't have. Malchus he couldn't have. He could have everything. And the fact he couldn't have Malchus is not a flaw. But he couldn't have Malchus. I mean, obviously he can create a situation of Nimna and Nimnayis where 2 plus 2 it should equal 5, obviously. Can have Malchus without having... We're talking about... according to the Rajba, yeah. We discussed Chanukah. That's true. That's true. When I say can't, I mean according to the pattern of... patterns of reality and of logic that he created. That's also true. And for Malchus to happen, there has to be a world. And this is what the Alter Rebbe is saying. What is Malchus? Malchus is how Hashem articulates himself. He condenses himself in a fashion that should not swallow up the world, but should justify their existence. Should justify an other one who can then introduce God into his life. And therefore, Malchus is synonymous with the concept of Shechina discussed throughout the chapter. However, all of the faculties above Malchus in spirituality, ultimately are expressions of divinity that are all embracing, all pervasive, and within him. Malchus is the first attribute that introduces otherness. So this Eitz Chaim now says that Malchus of Atzilus, which is Hashem's quality of Malchus, Atzilus is the world where the divine projections are manifest. That's the world, so to speak. We call it a world. Hashem identifies his qualities. That is the world of Atzilus. It's Malchus, which is Shechina, that encloses itself in Chabad, in the brain, before it goes to the body. You can't just have Malchus da Atzilus sustaining the worlds, creating the worlds. That would be like the sun in the presence of the rays. You wouldn't be able to see any rays. The first thing the Shekhinah has to do is Malchus has to enter into a brain. What is the brain? Chachma bina das of Briya. That's what Alter Rebbe is saying. It's clear. Now you see the structure that Alter Rebbe builds here. Now, it's not now, what's the next stage? The next stage is as follows. Generally, the Kabbalah identifies four worlds, generally. Atzilus, Briya, Yetzirah, Asiyah. Atzilus is the world of emanation, creation, formation, action. We discussed them at length in chapter 39 of Tanya. At length, the Alter Rebbe discusses the meaning of these four worlds. We're not going to get into now the meaning. We discussed it then in an elaborate fashion. Now, in each world of these four worlds, there are generally two dimensions. There are the spheres of the world. That is the divine energy of the world. And there is the worldliness of the world. The souls, the angels, the chambers, the shrines, spiritually speaking. The spheres, the ten spheres, is the divine energy that pervades the world. These spheres generate the creatures of that particular world. This is true about all of the four worlds, about the worlds of Briya, Yetzirah, and Asiyah, and Atzilus in a different way. So that's what Alter Rebbe now continues. That's why now is how why Malchus is the critical. Malchus is the critical point, is the critical sphere in all of the literature of Chassidus and Kabbalah. Without Malchus, we would be dead meat. I mean it in the sense we wouldn't be dead. We maybe would be more alive. We would be an expression of the Ein Sof. But then Hashem wouldn't be a Melech. He would be everything. But he just wouldn't be a husband. Yeah. So he says like this, Obislapshus and Bemalchus de Briya. Now, when they clothe themselves in Malchus of Briya, who's they? When Malchus of Atzilus, together with Chachma Bina Das of Briya, which is the soul and the brain in the metaphor. The divine soul, which is Malchus of Atzilus, clothes itself in the divine brain, which is Chabad of Briya. And they now clothe themselves in Malchus of Briya. Now what happens? Nivru HaNeshamas V'Amalachim Sheba Briya. The souls and angels, which exist in the world of Briya, are now created. So through the soul, via the brain, as they enclose themselves in Malchus of Briya, which is the final divine emanation of Briya, now the creatures of the world of Briya emerge. They're created. The souls and the angels. V'gam misham, also in addition to this, occurring as a result of the enclosement in Malchus of Briya, something else happens. Misham, from there, from this plane, from Malchus of Briya, in which is enclosed the Shechina, Malchus of Atzilus through Chabad of Briya, from that plane, Nimshech HaTalmud Shalafaneinu. That's where the Talmud that is before us, the Gemara that we possess, is derived from that plane, from that realm. Commission is Boyer Leil B'Shem HaTikunim, as has been explained previously in chapter 39. And the name of Tikunim, Tikunim is a section of the Zohar, a whole entire section called Tikunei Zohar, which is basically a book that it gives us 70 interpretations to the word Bereishis in the beginning of Torah. That's why in Tikunei Zohar there are 70 Tikunim, each Tikun explaining Bereishis. So we explained before in the name of Tikunim.
Those expressions
one example of it, yeah. Yeah, Bereishis, for example, is Bereishis, as you have like this. You have Boroshis, is one composition of Bereishis. You have Shabbos. How does it go? Shabbos, and what's the other two words? No, Bereishis. You have the Shin Beis Sof is Shabbos, so what's left? No, Shabbos is used already. Anyway, you could take a look. You have 70 interpretations for Bereishis. So explained before in the name of Tikkunim, Shabbailam Abriya, then in the world of Briya, this is in Tikkun Vav, in the Tikkun Ezer. I think a Tikkun Vav. Shabbailam Abriya, in the world of Briya, Me'ira Yisum Ashpiya Yisham. Chachmasa Binasi Vidaiti Shalain Seif Baruch, Ubabchinet Simtsum Atsum. In the world of Briya, there's shine and there flow forth. The Chachma Bina Das of the Ein Sof, blessed be He, in a very powerfully contracted manner. That means the Chachma Bina Das of Hashem of Atzilus. Chachma Bina Das of Atzilus is the Chachma Bina Das of Hashem. Higher than Atzilus, you don't talk about Ein Sof in terms of qualities, in terms of spheres. In Atzilus, you talk of the Ein Sof in terms of qualities. Hashem's Chachma, Hashem's Bina, Hashem's Das, Hashem's Chesed. But over there, it's totally united with Him. In Briya, you have the expression of Hashem's Chachma Bina Das, but in a Tzimtzum Atzum, in a very powerfully contracted manner. In order that the souls and the angels of Briya, which are finite beings, so that the souls of angels of this world should be able to receive influence and energy from this Chabad, from Hashem's Chabad. Mepchines Chabad Elu, so therefore they are severely contracted in Briya, so that the creatures of Briya can receive this identity, this flow. V'lachain, therefore, Nimshach Misham HaTalmud, therefore, it's from this place, from Malchus of Briya, and which has in it Chabad of Briya, from where the Talmud, as it's before us, is derived, it originates from there. Why Shul Gamkin Pchines Chabad? Because the Talmud is also of the category of Chachma Bin Adas. Sha'a Talmud Utaimei Alachis Al-Buryan, for the Talmud consists of the clearly defined reasons of the halachas of the laws, and the reasons being rational are from the category of chabad, of chachma bina das, intelligence, v'halachas atzman, the laws themselves, hein mimidais of shalein seif baruch hu, they are an embodiment of the emotional attributes of the Ein Sof, shein chesed din rachamim chuli, namely, you have chesed, which is attraction, din, which is rejection, rachman, which is compassion, and so forth. Shemehen, from these emotions, nimshach, originates. Haheter v'ha'isur, the permissible and the prohibited. V'ha'kosher v'ha'posel, and that which is valid and that which is invalid. V'ha'chiyuv ha'ptur, liability and blamelessness. They are an embodiment, the laws themselves are an embodiment of the divine emotive attributes. But the reasons for the halachos, which is what constitutes Talmud, that is an expression of Chabad of Ein Sof. And therefore I say that the Talmud that is before us is an embodiment and a derivative. It originates in the realm of Chabad of Briya and is a product of Chabad of Briya being enclosed in Malchus of Briya. What does the Alter Rebbe say? Let's go a step further and then we'll come back. Let's go a step. Now he goes to the next plane, next world. Obislapshus, ukamishakasav b'tikunim, as this is explained in Tikkun Isaiah, in Tikkun Vav.